Hi, today I'm talking to Bill Trustrail. Bill is the CEO of Sasabi, an Australian software company with a cloud-based analytics engine. One of the things that makes the cloud really interesting for a lot of ISVs is the ability to take the applications international. And this is something that Sasabi has been doing very successfully. So we're very grateful to Bill for taking the time to share his experiences with us today. Bill, just to start, what we'd like to do is just turn it over to you. If you could give us some background information on Sasabi.
Sure. Thanks, Harold. So Sasabi is a three-year-old company. We had previously had a on-premises business intelligence engine, and we moved it to Azure about 4 years ago. And through that process, we realized there was an opportunity for us to pivot from being a sell and transfer type business model to a SaaS model. And so several years ago, we made that decision and started the company Sasabi. We also intended it to be a global company from day one. So given that we were intending to deliver a SaaS application to clients, it seemed to make sense to us that we would be a international company. So we're essentially, I like to phrase us as a born in the cloud micro multinational. And so from day one, we had people in multiple geographies. And so when we had four staff, one was in New York, one in Canberra and in Australia, and two in Sydney in Australia. And so we established ourselves to be a selling globally from day one, which was really important to us. So, yep.
Can you just explain what a typical customer would look like and what a typical, if there's such a thing, a typical transaction would be?
Sure. So our business is transacted through business partners. So we have an analytics engine which enables you to take data from any source and put it into a format that makes it easy for end users to do analytics, whether that be simplistic or very complex analytics. So our clients are actually software vendors and systems integrators. And so I guess we'd categorize two different sales. One is to independent software vendors who take our product and integrate us into their solution. So that's a very different sales cycle as opposed to a systems integrator or a reseller who is looking at a very specific customer situation. So there's two distinct sales styles and sales approaches.
Okay. So Australia is a pretty good market for technology products. In fact, it's a market that a lot of US companies go to because Australians tend to be fairly early adopters. They make decisions quickly, nice advanced technology infrastructure. Why not just stay at home and focus on Australia?
Two things. So Australia is a great market, and it's a great market and often used by international vendors as a test market. As you say, we're an innovative country. We tend to embrace technology early and see how we can apply it to specific problems. So we definitely could have just started in Australia and then branched out from there, and that's a well-trodden strategy. However, our approach was that we wanted to prove that we could sell our product without having to get on planes, without having to be face-to-face with customers. So we built our sales model for scalability. So as a SaaS product, generally pricing models are very different from when you sell on-premises. So the ticket item, if you like, is a small amount per month. And you can't afford an expensive direct sales model in that approach. So we have designed our sales process from day one to be international. The Australian market, while it's a good market, is only 2% of the global IT market. And so it is a small market. And so if you get too confined and too narrow in the Australian market, that's very, very difficult to really scale your business quickly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come back to the stay at home and make money while you sleep strategy. But as you started to look at international markets, how did you prioritize them? How do you select the markets that you should be going to and spending your time and resources?
Mm-hmm. So to some extent, we've let the market dictate that. So we have reached out to business partners and potential business partners in different corners of the globe, and for us, I think it's been a testing process. The first thing has been language. So clearly for a small startup, we can't spread ourselves too thinly and move all our marketing material into multiple languages. So we have predominantly focused on English-speaking countries. Having said that, our first country, first customers were in Argentina, which is was a few little challenges, but it's a great place to have our first customers, and then Fiji, and then London, and then New Guinea, and then US. So it's been an interesting ride.
So you have been hopping back and forth between the southern and the northern hemispheres then?
In terms of customers, yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. So that has been useful. The other thing that has been a driver for us is that we run our solution out of the Azure cloud environment, the platform as a service. And some countries clearly have an Azure point of presence, and that obviously provides comfort for customers that are at all concerned about data sovereignty. And so there has been a little bit of focus around where the data centers are for that purpose alone. But really, it's been about language, market readiness for SaaS adoption, and availability of Azure data centers.
Well, that's an interesting term, you said market readiness. Are you finding that there's wide variations in market acceptance or interest in SaaS based on potentially vertical markets and countries?
I think our data points are too small for us to be able to make that sort of assumption, Harold. I think more often than not, it comes down to the individual intention of the ISV or the customer. And so that tends to be the drivers for us. We do see some countries, for example, New Zealand is very open to SaaS, and there's a number of very large SaaS providers who have come out of New Zealand. And so some of the smaller markets have been very early adopters of SaaS. But I think it's too hard for us to generalize at this point.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to come back to your strategy of staying at home and making money while you sleep. Have you found that being a SaaS company eliminates the need to travel, that you can do things remotely? Or is there still a need to go out and visit with customers and partners?
I think there is, it depends a little bit on the type of solution. For us, our solution is sold through a business partner. Now, the business partner has to meet with customers. So it really depends a little bit on the nature of your solution as to whether customers feel a need to connect with you. For us, the business partners have found it reasonably straightforward to interact with us globally without meeting. We tend to try to go to events where lots of Microsoft partners are going to be there. Examples of that are the Worldwide Partner Conference. And so we tend to make an effort to be at those events and to set up meetings with the our existing partners and potential partners at those conferences.
Okay.
But we to date haven't needed to get on planes to go and visit customers or partners as part of the sales process.
Okay. Now, as a small company based in Australia, which is not, the world's navel exactly geographically, it's a little bit remote.
Depends how you draw the map, Harold.
So, what's the impact been on your customer support of having clients in Argentina, the UK, the US, the Fiji? How does that impact your customer support?
We never sleep.
so that part of the strategy didn't work out.
Yeah. But at least we don't sleep at home. customer support, the first line of support is done by our business partners. And so they tend to be able to handle the majority of the calls that customers have. And then support after that, we have technical support in the US and in Australia. And we do have a third party in Latin America who actually does some development work for us as well. So we now have a bit broader coverage. As I said, being small and being Australian, we did make sure that we had a presence in two locations from day one. And that, I think that helps us in multiple ways to think internationally and to have different perspectives. So if we just stayed in Australia and tried to go globally or sell globally, I think we wouldn't have had anywhere near as much engagement, or we wouldn't have had the messaging as clear as having people in multiple regions from day one to give us that perspective and that diversity of thinking styles.
Now, is there an expectation for SaaS that support should be available 24/7? And if it is the expectation that it should be live support, or are SaaS customers happy to use some type of automated support platform?
I think that depends on the application and the criticality to the customer. So I think it's setting expectations correctly is what you can deliver. And I guess listening to the customers as to what they require. So our system isn't, our system's an analytics system, which often runs after the event. So you're doing your transaction processing, your business, and then your data is coming together for analytical processes. It tends not to be as critical for the customer as say their accounting or payroll systems or other core applications within their base. So we haven't had a 24/7 requirement for support at this point in time.
Okay.
But I think the question really comes down to the application, Harold, rather than the business model.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I'm going to change directions here a little bit and talk about pricing. For on-premise software, very traditionally, if it's an Australian ISV, they set their price point at 100 as a metric. And then it would be $100 Australian in the home market. It would be $100 US in the US and maybe in the Americas. It would be 100 euros in Europe and 100 pounds in the UK. When you have a SaaS solution, do you use different price levels, or are you using a universal pricing structure?
We've basically taken a universal pricing structure. So we price in US dollars and have a given price and transact in US dollars. And that has been our approach. I think people are used to that more with a lot of SaaS products, and a lot of applications that are sold globally over the internet. People just see a single price and are comfortable purchasing under those regimes.
Okay. I'm going to get back to a point that you mentioned a little bit earlier, and that's data sovereignty. You're an Australian company operating internationally. You've got an application running on Azure, which is a US-owned hosting platform. Do you find that the Patriot Act has an impact on your business?
We haven't so far. I think data sovereignty is probably more of an issue than the Patriot Act for the customers we've been speaking to.
We're just jumping in. I should actually set the stage for this a little bit and explain the difference to the viewers. Now, the Patriot Act is a U.S. law that technically gives the U.S. government the right to access information on foreign nationals as long as that information resides on a data center owned by a U.S. company or the subsidiary of a U.S. company. So technically, it means that the U.S. government, if they have the right reason, can get the right legal structure in place, can access information on an Australian national in Australia or a German national if that information resides on Azure. And so that's a very emotional issue for a lot of companies and a lot of individuals around the world. Data sovereignty is a separate issue where in many countries, they have a law that says that data on private individuals has to reside in that country. So I know that in, Colombia, for example, by law, any information on a private individual has to reside in Colombia. I'll kick it back to you, Bill.
So I guess there's two issues for us. Generally, our system stores aggregated data and often anonymized data as well. So for most customers, they haven't been as concerned about that as we might have seen. And I guess the other aspect of that question is that customers self-qualify. If they're worried about it, they're not going to start talking to a SaaS provider, and they're going to buy an on-premises solution. We see the purchasing process from customers has changed dramatically over the last 5 years, and now the buyer is actually does a lot more research before they ever engage with you. So I would imagine that people who are concerned about the Patriot Act or concerned about data sovereignty have already self-qualified out of our market space. But we haven't had that as an issue from very many customers at all.
Okay. So Are there any other advantages or disadvantages to you as a company of being on Azure as you build your business internationally?
Certainly. For us, our target market is the Microsoft reseller community and integrators. And so being aligned with Microsoft, being aligned with Microsoft strategies has really worked in our favor. So we find that being aligned with the Azure infrastructure has certainly helped us. Our software stack is all built on .NET, and so it's been very straightforward for us to run our platform on the Microsoft PaaS platform, and that has really helped us scale and get reach to business partners. So we're really targeting business partners who are already either in Azure or planning to move to Azure.
Okay, so that's a good news about being on Azure. Are there any disadvantages or challenges for you being on Azure?
At a local level, there was before they had their data center in Australia, but Microsoft opened the data centers locally about 6 months ago, and that's made a big difference to the local market. But that had been the major issue for us. But no, there's no technological problems for us on Azure. It's a competitive platform, so it's been great for us in all honesty.
Okay. We had exchanged some emails in setting up this conversation. Are there any other issues that you would like to emphasize that companies should think about as they go international?
I think intentionality. So for us, we were very, very intentional about our desire to be international and to be global. And so I think using a SaaS solution to go as a platform for being international makes a lot of sense. I think the other aspect I mentioned already is diversity of culture and diversity of thinking. And so having people with a lot of experience in your team that have operated globally and having people in other geographies in your team is really important. So I think diversity and intentionality are probably two things that I would stress for a software company that's looking at that.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, you've been very helpful, Bill. This is an issue that a lot of ISVs are looking at. It's not just simply putting your application up in a marketplace and expecting the international markets to beat a path to your door. There's no shortcut to success, and you really have to think through it. And I think that the feedback that you've provided today will be very, very helpful. Any chance I'll see you back in Bellevue before long?
I'm not sure when I'll be in the States next. We're definitely planning to be at WPC in Orlando in July, and I'd like to try and get up to Bellevue sometime between now and then on a separate trip if I can.
Well, if not, then we'll catch up in Orlando. Look forward to seeing you again. Thanks very much. I know this is an early time for you in Australia, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience with us. Thanks, Bill.
That's one of the other things about being global. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye.